Welcome to the Reformist Pipeline, your dose of empowerment and the pipeline to inform your decisions on how you can support change in our education system. And this is Lindsay, affectionately known as Miss Black.
And I'm Heidi, Mr. Broussard. If you're feeling day four of quarantine.
Day four. It's crazy because it's a mood that just about everybody understands.
Yeah, it really is. Like all the memes, it's been a lot. And I feel like for this to be the first time that we've ever experienced this, everyone is, well, from the people that I've checked in on, I know that people are kind of stir crazy, but it also has been a lot of like a lot of people have been very self-reflective also.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So for this episode, this is actually our officially our first bonus episode.
Yes.
And we just know that there's a need and we have to fill the need right now. And we need to talk about the coronavirus because we know that so many people can relate and so many people understand what we're going through. But a lot of people don't know exactly what the education system in our nation right now is going through. So we're going to take this time to actually skip all of our typical segments that we usually have. And we're actually going to jump right into talking about what the coronavirus is and how it actually impacts our education system.
So I'm so excited to be jumping into this episode today to address the growing pandemic that reached the United States on January the 31st. To best address this, Lindsay and I thought it would be best to have a medical professional who knows more about COVID-19 or the coronavirus. Our very first guest is Michael Booth. Michael Booth is a Howard University alum and currently in his last year of his acute care nurse practitioner program at Vanderbilt University. So without any further ado, welcome Mr. Booth. How are you?
Hey, John, I'm doing all right.
Good, good, good. So it's so funny because Lindsay and I were talking yesterday, and one of the things that we were talking about is just how we always refer to you as Michael Booth and never Michael. So that
literally is everyone in my life, teachers, friends, family, it doesn't matter. People cannot say my first without saying the last name. It's crazy.
it just flows. It just flows. And I love it.
I guess.
So first and foremost, thank you so much for being with us today and taking this time out of your busy schedule, because I know that you've transitioned to online classes, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I have, but I think this is the perfect distraction and a great way for me to procrastinate. So I'm more than happy to be on.
Yes, thank you, thank you. And so, as you know, I'm just going to be asking you these questions from the perspective of a medical professional, because I think that it's one thing to be an educator in this space right now, with all the uncertainty that we've kind of been experiencing. That's another thing for me to be in the space in which I'm in, which is kind of like the HR talent acquisition realm, which we're responding to things. Like literally today there was something that the president signed into law that had to deal with paid sick leave. So that's something that me and my department we've been trying to like figure out like what this means for us.
Oh, wow.
But more importantly, trying to talk to you, the medical professional, about what this COVID-19 or coronavirus how we even got here, and so like trying to really address those elements so that we can be in the know of what's going on and know what we need to do so that we are protecting ourselves and able to protect our families and our loved ones and what have you. So let's go ahead and jump in. I guess one of the first questions that I did kind of have that I did not, so hopefully you knocked this one out of the park, I did not kind of talk to you about this one, but so I know that we've named this COVID-19, mm-hmm. but before they were calling it coronavirus. Is that something that, what is that about? Is that more so coronavirus means that it's something just like a new type of viral type of thing?
So I'm in no way, shape, form an infectious disease physician, but they basically name, I actually looked this up the other day. So coronavirus is a family of viruses, just like influenza. You know, we have different strains of influenza. Like we had swine flu, bird flu, we had H1N1, we have influenza A and influenza B, which are two primarily the most common influenzas that people experience during the flu season. But in terms of COVID, so COVID actually stands for, I'm glad I looked this up too. COVID, C-O is the first part, it's for a coronavirus. And then vid is for, I think, like a viral disease. And then 19 is it started in 2019. And so that's kind of how they created the name. And so another form of coronavirus is the SARS. And we know we talked about SARS kind of way back. I don't know when SARS was kind of a thing, maybe 2010. But that's just, it's in the family of viruses. And so it's just how infectious disease and epidemiologists kind of like group different viruses together and kind of categorize everything in the medical field. Is just, the names are just outrageous. But that's kind of way they kind of keep track of everything and like organize it. But yeah.
Wow. But the thing is like, it kind of makes sense. Like even how you broke that down, I was like, wow, this is very methodical. Like, I feel like that's what I do appreciate about the medical field, if nothing else. So what is the significance of social distancing? I know it's this term that or this phrase more so that everyone has just been throwing it out there. And what do we need to be aware of?
Right. So social distancing has been ruining lives, ruining happy hours.
Brunch. Okay.
But I think it's kind of important that we kind of like talk about social distancing and, you know, distinguish it from quarantine. And so some of us, like on Twitter and stuff, we've been talking about, oh, I'm got my quarantine snacks, you know, I got, you know, that kind of thing. But quarantine is actually not the same thing as social. It's not the same thing. So quarantine really is when you need to isolate yourself from everyone. Even if you're in the house with people, you need to isolate yourself in a room. And so quarantine is for those individuals who are showing symptoms or who have come in contact with people who possibly may have, you know, the coronavirus, COVID-19. And so, for example, I don't know, let's say, you know, we found out Idris Elba came down with coronavirus. You know, he's probably at home with his family. And so he needs to quarantine himself from his family members until he's no longer showing symptoms. Or I think the period is 14 days. Don't quote me, but that's what needs to happen so that he doesn't infect anybody else in his circle. Or say, like, for me, I go travel somewhere. I traveled to Italy right before this happened. And then they announced that Italy was like a hot zone. Like my school, Vanderbilt, told us, like, if you come back from spring break and you've been to Italy, you need to quarantine yourself for 14 days. And so that means you really should not be leaving the house, really should not be around other people so that you don't, you know, to mitigate community spread. And then social distancing is more, so social distancing, and I was doing some research from the CDC. It's an example of community, it's a community mitigation strategy. And so community mitigation is really a set of actions that persons or communities can take to really help slow the spread of a novel viral infection. And so coronavirus is a novel infection because we don't know anything about it. We don't have any, you know, it's not in the history books. It's not, you know, it's new. Right. And so we really need to stop the spread. And so it's especially important to engage in social distancing because we don't have a vaccine and we don't have any drugs for it. You know, it's like you see something like, oh, that's HIV or, oh, that's herpes or, oh, that's not to just be pointing out STDs, but like those are the first things that came to mind, but like, you know, things that we can treat, viruses that we can treat.
Exactly.
You know? So, and really the goal of social distancing and kind of preventing community spread is we want to reduce the likelihood of severe illness for people who are more likely to get illnesses, like older people and people who have like suppressed immune systems. So say like you got a sister or brother right now that's on chemotherapy and this virus is going around, they can easily get it because their immune system is so weak and can't fight off anything. So that's just something to think about. But then the other reason we want to do kind of social distancing and prevent this community spread is because we want to protect our healthcare infrastructure. You know, from an equipment standpoint, you know, some of the hospitals and some of the nurses I've kind of been talking to and things I've been seeing on Twitter from medical professionals, we, you know, it's common practice. Every time I walk in a room and every time I walk out of a room, I have hand sanitizer right at the door. We're running out of hand sanitizer. And so they're telling people, wash your hands. And that's crazy because I promise you, I use hand sanitizer at least 100 times, if not more, a day. And so for there not to be any in our hospitals, the places where we want to prevent the spread of infection from patient to patient, we don't have those resources. And so also masks. They're telling nurses, use the same mask, you know, same sweaty mask that you've been using from patient to patient. We're supposed to get a new mask every encounter. Every time we go in a room, a new mask, unless it's an N95 mask. And you generally, that has its own stipulations, but we're not getting into the mask situation. and just from a bed perspective, or let's look at staffing. And so I'll be quick with this. staffing there. So I'm an acute care nurse practitioner student, and I'm specifically in like an intensivist track. So it's a critical care ICU kind of cohort that I'm learning how to take care of ICU patients. And so people who are critically ill. And so oftentimes, you know, you've heard of breathing machines or life support. And so you're taking care of patients who really need advanced monitoring and kind of interventions to support them through their illnesses. We only have so many, you know, intensivist doctors and so many ICU nurse practitioners and physician assistants. And so when we have our workforce getting sick because this virus is spreading so much, who's going to take care of the patients? And then from a bed perspective, and then from an equipment perspective, I was doing some research and we only have about 100 and, you know, 100 to 50 to 200,000 ventilators in the United States. We have a, you know, billion, you know, I don't know the United States population, but we have billions of people in the United States. And so if more people get infected, it may come to a point where we don't have the beds to take care of patients and or the equipment to handle the, I guess, the severity of the disease. It could come to a point, say, you know, your grandmother gets infected and, you know, the doctor has to say, okay, well, we don't have enough ventilators for everybody. She likely, you know, whatever criteria they have to come up with to say this person, you know, kind of rationing supplies, like this person has a better chance of survival, so we're going to give it to them. And in that case, your grandmother be the, you know, she may be older and still would have survived if we had the resources, but because she, her, you know, whatever criteria they have to come up with to say, you know, she's, her likelihood of survival is low, so we're not going to give her this ventilator, we're not going to give her this intervention or this drug, you know, that kind of thing. And so these are things we have, we aren't able to think about because we're thinking, oh my gosh, I have to stay inside. I can't, it's 80 degrees outside. It's going to be 80 degrees in DC this weekend. I was looking and we can't go to happy hour or brunch or whatever. And so we don't really see the impact that is building or the doom that's kind of looming because we're not in that world. And that's understandable, but it's important that we listen to our researchers, our epidemiologists and our doctors who are kind of leading us in this. It's a scary thought, but you know, we really got to pay attention to what is being said. And so social distancing is so important. But that's, I'm gonna get off that kind of soapbox. But.
No, but this is so important. And I think that this just goes to show that, like, as a country, we just have been behind the curve on even having these conversations, right? Because why did it take this type of event for us to want to talk about this? Exactly. We're kind of so retroactive.
Yeah.
And so I think it's very important that not only are our listeners getting that tidbit about social distancing, but because I think that people are able to operate, people operate better when they know, have a reason why.
Exactly.
And I think that our current administration really has been trying to tell people why, but it's like, it's too late. Like,
exactly.
You first have been telling people to stay in their homes. And then just like you said, I feel like the language around quarantine versus social distancing has been kind of, they've been making it seem as if they're both the same thing, and when you literally just said that they aren't. So I think that trying to have these conversations and really giving people the rationale as to why social distancing is important so that we can flatten the curve,
exactly,
is important.
And another thing, like, so you want to make sure you're getting information from reputable sources. So, you know, the media says different things kind of every day. And we don't want to say, I'm not going to, you know, name any names or do that. But we know that we have reputable information from the CDC. Our scientists are putting out information. If you want to learn about this stuff and what is COVID-19? What does this mean? What is social distance? You can go to the website and it has guidance for every, and we'll talk about it as we get through the conversation, but there's guidance for almost every aspect of our lives in here. How can you prepare as a household? How can schools prepare? How can, you know, how can our office environment prepare? Like, you know, how can we get ready for this? And really for any pandemic or epidemic that kind of strikes us nationally and globally.
Yeah, I completely agree. That is great guidance, is to refer to the CDC. And I think the website is cdc.gov, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah.
Great, great, great. And so my next question to you is, should students and teachers return to their campuses? And if they do return, what precautions should be kind of taken to mitigate any type of risk for students, for teachers, and the community?
So, you know, and I can't make that call. So again, I'm going to refer to, you know, our researchers at the CDC. They're saying, they recommend that, you know, schools and administration especially just develop a school cancellation policy or a school cancellation kind of like guidance or follow the leadership of the local public health officials. And so that's kind of your local government, whatever the local health officials are saying based on what they're getting from a federal level, from a national level, it's kind of where schools should be kind of determining, okay, is it good to open back up or should we stay closed? But I think I want to speak more to the, you know, what's, can, you know, if just kind of before pandemic and after pandemic, what we should be doing for students and for teachers and just really the how to, you know, like we said, mitigate that risk. We as a society, and I've kind of noticed this because I even myself, I'll be sick as a dog and I still take myself to the hospital. You know, we'll be sick. I remember one time in seventh grade, I was in orchestra. My fever was about 103 and I was trying to play my violin and I couldn't even hold my violin up. And it just made me think, like, we as a society, as an American society, we really don't value rest and we don't value kind of just staying away when you're sick. When you're sick, stay home. And that goes for parents, right, teachers, you know, administration, anybody, workplace. If you're sick, you need to stay home because you can infect other people. And so really we see the importance of it now because we have this really infectious disease. But with the general flu, with the cold, you can still infect other people. It's just maybe not as virulent and it's not going to be as a significant impact. But I think this more than anything should show us what we should be doing, because if we had the thought of staying home at baseline when we're sick, we wouldn't be having to force people to stay home because we now have this really crazy virus going around, you know? So,
right.
And I get it. Not everybody can stay home and then we can go down this socioeconomic have that conversation, but if you're able to stay home and you have the resources to do so, you should. And that is before pandemic, that's after pandemic, and that's also, especially during. But if we as a society kind of set a precedent to say, you're sick, you need to leave. Even if it's like, I got the sniffles, or I got a little low fever, you need to rest. And so that you can expedite the time reduce the time that you're out of commission and really get back to baseline. So that's kind of just my take on that. We really need to just focus on, if you're sick and showing symptoms, you need to take it at home. You know, so
that is very, and the thing is like, I think about this and I think about when I was teaching, and I'll be completely honest, there would be times in which I would not be feeling my best self and still would go in, because it's like, you as an educator, you're thinking like, okay, how much work would it take for me to call out? And I think that's probably not where we know it's not the best approach to be taking. Right. But it's just like work-life balance as a whole in America is just something that we really don't have.
Exactly.
And then more importantly, I think that educators just are all constantly feeling as if they're on the front line, because they are. And it just takes so much to literally take a day off. And because this was even the conversation I had with Lindsay, I was like, Lens, like, if you don't feel good, take off.
Exactly.
Like, that job will be
right.
And it's just like, you just built this whole, but we feel like, and I think it also is like a millennial thing, like, we just feel so invincible, which is why a lot of people have just been out and not social distancing. But it's like, no, like, now we're getting, and I think you probably have seen this, but now there have been more recent reports saying that 20-year-olds have been like, passing away from these from COVID-19 because of the pre-existing conditions that they did not know they had.
Exactly.
So thank you so much for that. Goodness, this is such a good conversation. Okay, so last question that I have for you is, how can we be more prepared to face this type of situation in the future?
Again, I'm gonna point this back in the direction of my folks at the CDC. So just kind of was doing some more research as well on this topic, and they actually put out some guidance on this really from a household perspective in 2017. It's called Get Your Household Ready for Pandemic Flu. You know, because we've experienced pandemics in the past, maybe not to this extent, not to the extent that we're seeing grocery stores being empty.
Right.
You know, I ran into a woman at the store earlier, and she was like, you know, I was alive for the AIDS epidemic. And back then we didn't know how it was being spread. We didn't know that it was just in body fluid. And so we didn't even see this back then. And so she's like, I've never seen anything like this. And she's, you know, she's older. And so a lot of my older folks that I'm kind of coming across are like, this is scary. Cause you know, we've never seen anything. We've never seen people react like this. We've never seen, you know, it's just not, it's like literally a novel virus. But they put out some guidance in 2017. Also saw the Department of Homeland Security, which is a national agency. They put out some information about what you can do before pandemic and after and during. So you can go online and kind of just look at your resources. I'm really Google and then look to see where it's coming from. If it's some rinky-dink kind of news outlet, no. Maybe Washington Post, New York, New York Times. Yeah, kind of look at that. And a lot of times in their articles, they'll kind of reference things. And so you can go maybe look at a research article, look at who said what and who's quoting it. You can trace, it's traceable. On more so like reputable news outlets like that. But I want to say, how can we prepare for this? You know, across our nation, we experience kind of like natural disasters and things that are unexpected all the time. And I want to say, kind of default to what you do for those. And so you and I are from California. And so we knew growing up, we had our earthquake drills and everything like that. And then they told us, you know, if an earthquake happens, this is what you need to have on hand. And so we know, you need to have some extra water. You need to have a flashlight. You need to have your batteries. You know, those kind of things that you have in emergency situations at baseline, it's good to just have an emergency kit, an emergency plan for your household. You know, kind of like, okay, if this happens, guys, if, you know, we need to, this is where we go. This is who we need to communicate with or who we need to talk to. And it will also kind of reduce the likelihood to have to like hoard supplies like we've been seeing out and about. Like I went to Costco and Costco is like, Costco is crazy, you know, and Costco generally is able to handle like, I mean, because everything in there is in bulk. And so when,
bulk,
you,
right,
when,
exactly.
when you got the bulk, I'm running out of bulk. Like, it's nuts. But like, if we had extra toilet tissue on hand and we just had a reserve specifically for emergency situations and we kind of, you know, renewed it and especially like medications and things, like we need to have
right,
those
exactly.
supplies kind of like already tucked away. And even like yeah. we just had tornadoes 2 weeks ago and like the people in this area have lived through tornadoes before. They know what to do. They know how to prepare or know how to prepare. And so, but it's unique to your region. So, you know, you could be in Philly or you can be in Rochester, New York and Snowmageddon happens and you're trapped indoors for 2 weeks, no power. What are those basic things that you need to think about? And it's kind of, and that would kind of translate a lot in a lot of ways to a pandemic. What we're experiencing now. So I would just kind of look at the resources that we have online from the CDC and then kind of just like stick to your gut. What do you think you need to have in case of emergency where you're not able to leave the house, where you're not able to really have, and maybe you don't have electricity. What are the things that you need to think about? And it's individual for each family, obviously, because each family
right,
has different
exactly.
needs. You know, some people have special needs children. What does that look like? You know, so you've got to make it a preparedness plan. But I think, and we can't make it. I think it should be simplified. I don't think we should kind of go all out and make this crazy elaborate plan. But kind of just what are the basic things that you guys need to get through hard times? If you don't have the access to be able to leave your home to go, you know, So
that was a great answer, and I think that generally covers everything. Like you said, like that's just not even just about pandemics. It's literally encompassing everything. Like if you are caught in a snowstorm, there's an avalanche, there's like whatever you are going through, you need to make sure you are prepared. And the only way that you can do that is if you're actually being intentional about that. So that is groceries, you having that system, that schedule for you and your kids, figure it out. So, preparedness. But yeah, so thank you so much, Mr. Michael Booth. And the thing is like I have to say what I always say. You know, I don't call you Michael Booth. I say Dr. Michael Booth. And I'm going to continue to speak that into existence. So, but yeah, thank you so much. Do you have like any lingering thoughts that you know that people need to hear or?
I just think that we need to take this seriously. Like I did leave the house today. I've been kind of on like not a quarantine, but I've been social distancing. Our school's online and everything. So I really am not going anywhere. I ran to the grocery store just to kind of like touch up on what I got last week. And I'm seeing people, I don't know if it's because I'm here in Nashville and in Tennessee where people aren't like, I don't know if I, you know, I feel bad because I haven't really been following listening to hear from maybe our governor or from our mayor, because this is the capital, but I've been actually listening to everything else happening in other states. Like, oh my gosh, I know what's happening in LA. I know what's happening in DC, but I think we need to really take this seriously, and we need to listen to what our health officials are saying. You know, we have our president, and, you know, but we need to listen to what the doctors, what the epidemiologists, and what the researchers are saying about this, because they have spent their entire careers studying diseases. And this is not their first epidemic, their first pandemic. Well, this is a pandemic. So we can talk about that too, real quick. Epidemic is really a disease that kind of just spreads. It can spread to a great area. And so say maybe a epidemic could be locally, or it could be the difference between an epidemic and a pandemic. And we've upgraded to a pandemic is means that it's the disease can spread literally anywhere. And so as we see it spread across nations, across waters, you know, and so it just epidemic to pandemic is kind of like a on a continuum. And so pandemic is kind of like the far extreme of that continuum, saying mm-hmm. we've reached the point where it's kind of spread as far as it can, you know, and to right. a lot of people in a small amount of time. So that means it's very serious. But we really, like I said, we really need to take this serious. I was just out and I was like, people are at the park right now. Like people are like, I mean, you know, we still have to live our lives. I get it. But it's so right. important right now, especially in this moment, in these next couple of weeks, to really engage in social distancing. And we've got to take it serious, because it could be your grandmother who may not be able to survive this because we don't have the resources to take care of her. Or we don't have enough ventilators, just and say, you know, she's not able to breathe on her own. We don't have the life-sustaining equipment to take care of the people that you love. And so it could happen to your family. And it's going to get to a point where this thing will start to appear in people that you know. And it can affect people that you know in ways that you would never have thought possible. And so if we don't take it seriously right now, it could have catastrophic effects for our lives moving forward. And really, you know, we don't want to see that, but it's the truth. It's the truth and the reality of the situation. So that's kind of just what I want to leave out there. And hopefully we really start to kind of dig in and like engage what they're saying about what we should be doing for our personal safety and for the safety of the community. But yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Michael Booth. So like I said, everyone,
all I got, all I'm about to get is a master's degree. I ain't going back to school.
Hey, I'm but like I said, I'm going to continue speaking into existence, but yeah, so we really do appreciate you for taking the time, to serve as our medical professional, to give us that perspective and to kind of give us a lot more insight as to not only what we are doing, but why we need to do it. So thank you so much for doing it. And we appreciate your
Thanks
time.
For having me.
You know, shout out to that man, Michael Booth. Okay.
Yes.
You know, we both went to Howard, and to all my Howard people and HBCU people, we were both on Howard's court for the university, the Royal Court. So I was Miss School Education.
Ooh.
He was Mr. CNAS, which is College of Nursing, Health, and Allied Sciences. Ooh, please tell me I got that right. You know, fun fact, if anybody remembers, there was a specific year of Royal Court where we actually didn't have a Mr. and Miss Howard University pageant. That was us.
Wow.
That's all I'm going to say about that. So thank you to Michael Booth. We're going to jump back in to talk about the coronavirus. And Jihad is actually going to give us some data just around the numbers with school and how schools have been impacted in terms of the populations.
It's so interesting because I feel like normally I'm not like a numbers person, but data is just, oh my goodness, I love it. But so let's just first jump off and talk about the fact that there are literally 98,277 public schools in the United States. And there are 34,576 private schools in the United States. And in regards to all of the students that attend schools, there are about 50.8 million public school students. So those are students that are attending some type of public school.
Including public charter schools. So if you listen to the last episode, you know there's a difference between traditional public schools and public charter schools.
Yes.
But they're all under the same umbrella.
Yes. And then we also have that there are 5.8 million private school students. And so we just wanted to give you kind of that context so that later on when we start talking about schools and where we are with that, you will have some type of knowledge of what this actually means and how many students are in school or out of school or what have you. So let's jump into this timeline of COVID-19. So in December 2019, China alerted the World Health Organization of several flu-like cases in Wuhan. Wuhan is a province in China. And so these cases occurred between the dates of December 12th and December 29th. In January 2020, we had our first case in the United States, and that happened January the 21st. And then on January 30th, the first person-to-person transmission of COVID-19 occurred. So we just want to jump in and give you kind of that context so that you know, like, okay, where did this even originate from? Because I know that we've been talking a lot about COVID-19, but not really knowing how did this all break down, because in the last literal week, life has really shifted for all of us.
Flipped upside down.
So now we're jumping into school closures. So in Virginia, as of March 13th, the first district closed in the state of Virginia. And then March 16th is when the governor of Virginia closed all schools in the state. For Maryland, March 16th was when the governor, Larry Hogan, he closed all schools in the state as well. And as you see, we're kind of seeing a reoccurring theme that, and so the same thing happened in DC, which is March 16th was the first state closure or first district closure. Mm-hmm. Sorry, DC's not a state.
It's confusing. It's
confusing. Right. But as you can see, it seems as if there was probably some type of meeting that was held with all the governors, with all state the mayors, officials. State officials, exactly, in which they had a big discussion about what needs to be done so that we can kind of take whatever preventative measures so that this COVID-19 can stop spreading. So, Lindsay.
Yeah, let me take this. Let me take this right here.
Yes.
So, just for context, we talked about the DMV area just now. As of right now, when we're recording this, just to be very specific, 39 states have closed all schools as a state mandate. Now, there are other counties within these other states that have closed down schools, but may not have closed down the entire state, just because places like West Virginia or South Dakota that have very low numbers don't have a need to close down every single school in the state, maybe just some in like counties that are densely populated with people with the virus. But I want to talk about my experience and how, like, just last week, like, my worries as an educator were so freaking different. Like, I have this one student, this one boy, and his writing, when I'm asking him to write about math, like, and write and reply to, like, the math question or the statement, he'll go somewhere far left. And, like, that was my biggest issue last week. And then stuff just flipped upside down.
Hmm.
So Monday on the 9th of March, you know, I'm in DC. We found out on that Monday that the following Tuesday, the 10th, we were about to be closed for deep cleaning. Now I'm like, oh, this lit, okay? Because usually March is a very difficult time for teachers.
Talk about that.
Okay,
please.
Let's talk about it. Woo! Because we got no breaks, baby.
None at all.
So January, you know, we coming off a winter break.
Yep.
Right? So we get back to school, like, oh, we're refreshed.
Right.
February, we have this week-long break, which we talked about in a previous episode. And then March is the whole entire month. We got to go the whole month and then two more weeks until spring break, because we don't have March spring break.
And then just to also give context, like, from August, when school starts, to December, there are so – literally from August to December, there are – you have multiple days off. So March literally is the first month in the whole entire school year that you don't have any type of day.
You have nothing. Your body's just supposed to adjust. So it's Monday, right? And I'm already tired. I'm exhausted. I'm at recess.
Right.
My co-teacher, shout out to Kevon, she runs up to me and is like, did you see the email? I'm like, no, girl, I'm asleep. Like, what? And so we got an email that they're having a deep cleaning. I'm like, okay, great. So Tuesday, I'm relaxing. I think I ran a couple of errands. I got some sleep. And I'm like, oh, come back Wednesday. We get a message on Wednesday, right, from my CEO. And when the following week, so next Friday after this Wednesday, so actually when this episode drops is the day that we were supposed to have professional development.
Right.
So I might call that PD. Professional development is when there's no students. There's just teachers. And we're doing like workshops and trainings. Sometimes it's not as workshop and training-y as we mm-hmm. would like it. It's kind of a waste of time sometimes. But anyways, we're supposed to have a PD this Friday. But my CEO was like, hey, we're actually going to switch the PD from Friday to Monday. We're going to bump it up so that we can talk about what remote learning will look like in case the virus hits us, right? So we get that on Wednesday. I'm like, okay, bet. Make sure my parents are communicated with and they know that we won't have PD
right
on Friday. So we just got to make accommodations to switch the day. Now I'm like, just going to carry on. Then that was Wednesday. We go through the short day. Thursday comes about. And then we got word that we'd actually be closed for all of this week. Like just this week, just from the 17th to the 20th. But we would still be working on that Monday to figure out what remote learning is going to look like. And I'm like, that's a little confusing to me, but I'm a rock with it because I'm just rocking with whatever y'all tell me right now. And at this point, I'm not taking it like fully serious
yet. Right.
Because mind you, I was happy that we was doing a deep cleaning. They didn't really deep clean.
Yeah. And that's the thing.
They didn't.
I'm not really surprised.
I took a Lysol wipe and I rubbed it down the railing on the stairwell and it was black by the time I took it off.
That's disgusting.
It is. I'm like, so y'all have never cleaned this.
Right.
Okay, bet. But anyways. So then Thursday afternoon, that's when we got the word that this whole week we were going to be out. So that was like Thursday around 4:39 p.m. Mm-hmm. So around 7:51 a.m. on Friday, we get another message from the CEO. The CEO's talking about the mayor is about to announce that all D.C. schools will close through the 31st, through the entire month,
right,
based on one of the CDC's initial recommendations. So you shouldn't do this, but I was reading my emails while I was driving to work. Mm-mm.
And I love that you prefaced it.
Don't do this at home. I'm like, wait, what? Because now this is a whirlwind of like thoughts and emotions. And I'm like, oh, okay. Then this means there must be a potential extension that would take away my spring break. Because this is my priority at this time. I'm like, wow, like we're going to be out for 2 weeks. That means they're probably going to take away my spring break as they're doing for DCPS. Because we're a charter school, we tend to follow DCPS's schedule. And then throughout the day, I mean, we're getting hella emails back to back to back to back. And I'm trying to read all of them to stay abreast, but like also teach my kids. So at this point, what I've been told is that we'll be out until the 31st and they're like, we're likely going to stay closed. You damn Skippy, we're probably about to stay closed.
Right.
Like there, I know that Fairfax County is close to the 10th and Fairfax County is in Virginia.
Yeah. And I think that it also is important to, Oh. You're right. I just think it's also important to note that like, not only is Lindsay receiving communication about her school, but like area schools are also like, communication was happening like no other. Like when I tell you I was getting notifications, Montgomery County, just like you said, Fairfax, Fredericksburg, like you name the PG County, like, just all different types of notifications about courthouses closing, government closing. And so for all that to be happening in literally a day and you're still like, oh, okay, like trying to remain calm.
Like what? Because at the beginning of the day, I'm very transparent with my students, right?
Yeah, right?
So I was telling sixth grade already, we hadn't told the parents that we were going to be out for 2 weeks, mm-hmm. but I was telling my sixth grade class, I'm like, explain to them like, hey, we're probably going to be out for 2 weeks. They're like, okay, cool. I'm like, it's probably going to take away your spring break. They're like, oh, dang, but okay, cool. And then I have a calendar in my room. So they didn't really get it until right. I started taking, I have post-its that represent whatever event we're about to do mm-hmm. during those weeks. And I'm taking off the post-its. They're like, oh, dang, we're not going to have that field trip. Oh, dang, we're not going to do this. And I'm like, y'all, this like could get real. And like, I don't want you to be scared. Like, I don't want you to have anxiety about it. So we watched like a couple videos throughout the week because I don't know the level of access to like, relevant and true information
right
my families are going to get, and then after you might get some on Instagram filtered through a parent
exactly
and then get it to a kid. Like I don't want y'all to be like super scared. So we had that conversation, but then I told them we're gonna be out of school, and I got a message from my principal that said don't tell the families. I told the kids, I said, look, Mr. so-and-so just said that I can't tell y'all this, so if somebody asks you
right
if you heard it from me, you didn't hear from me. One of my little girls is like, I don't even know what you talk about, Miss Black. I'm like, you right, sis? They're like, was like, okay, no problem. I said, this is our secret. Right. And if you tell somebody, I'll deny it and I'll say that you're lying. So it was just a lot to try to take in. I'm like, damn, I'm not going to see my kids for like months. At this point, I'm thinking I'm not going to see my kids for weeks.
Right.
Okay, cool. And now I'm like, it's potential that I won't see them for a month, months until the next school year. Like that is It's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot. It's a lot to think about. And I also have to, just to go back to like what you were saying about how you try to kind of prepare them. And I think that that is another piece that we need to talk more about, because especially given that we don't know when y'all are going back to school, like the fact that you were even able to have like some type of conversation with your kids, I feel like that is also that's needed because like our kids, we already are teaching like a very vulnerable population where they have like relationship and like where they value like the relationships that they have, and they mean so much to them. And so for that to literally disappear for an indefinite amount of time, that like that means
it's hard to conceptualize as an adult,
right?
So I'm like, a child, y'all don't really get it yet. No, y'all don't really get it yet.
It's not gonna hit.
It's insane. So at this point, there were just a lot of things going through my mind at this time, because I'm like, what does this mean for my job? What does this mean for like my actual teaching? What does this mean? They sent some email talking about HR reach out about salary and benefits. I'm like, what are you talking about? We ain't nothing to talk about.
Yeah.
I'm employed with a salary. There's nothing that we're talking about right now. I then received an email that said that our benefits and our salary will go on as it typically would. But even just the thought of receiving that email and be like, the thought of like, you may not pay me for doing something that I wouldn't be able to do,
right?
Which I know is definitely some people's reality right now. So like that little bit of shock is a mere fraction of what people are actually experiencing.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I don't even know if we even talked about this, but like there are hourly employees that work in schools. And so what does that look like for them given? And, but granted, I have seen that like some custodial workers as well as cafeteria workers.
They've been
there and they've been doing like the meal handouts and meal preparation.
But you know that some instructional aides are hourly workers,
right? Yeah,
because I have some instructional aides, and like when they're in the instructional aide, it's kind of like, I'm not trying to diminish it, I'm just trying to use a phrase that is accessible to all people listening, but it's kind of like a teacher's assistant or like a second teacher that's not the main teacher.
Right.
But oftentimes they kind of share the workload. The
responsibility.
So somebody, one of the people sharing the workload is salary. The other one is hourly. But at my school, at least they're still paying people.
That's good.
Like the regular price.
That's really
price.
Good.
It's all insane. So then at this point, right now, what we're doing in my school, and this is, I know other people are doing different things and we might move to those things, but we went to school on Monday. We congregated in a large group of adults on Monday.
And you weren't supposed to do that, right?
We weren't supposed to do that.
At that point, the CDC guideline once said was you can't be in a group of 50 or more.
We didn't have a group of 50, but it's funny to say.
But, right.
It's funny to say. But we went and we made like packets, and it felt okay because usually when we have a break, we make packets for them. So I have like a lot of review sheets. I gave them a schedule. You do a review sheet. You do 30 minutes of our digital content. We have a program online for those that have access to computers. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
And then the last piece would be, what was the last piece? Why am I tripping? Oh, they had a math menu. Okay. So there was like a table of different math options. One of them was like, hey, research a mathematician and write what you learn. Or, hey, find two athletes that play the same sport and write down their stats and compare their stats.
Oh, wow.
Who do you think is a better athlete? Yeah, so try to make the math real and try to not make it just about computation.
Right.
So those are the three things that I know I have my students doing. I gave them a second, an optional piece, though, of like, I suggested YouTube videos that they could watch to learn the lessons that I would teach.
Mm-hmm.
And then I gave them the work, and then I gave them a place where they could go online and check the work. So they could get used to teaching themselves,
right?
Because even if we move to teaching via Zoom, it's still going to be a self-teaching that they're going to have to get used to, a certain level of it.
Like, there's not going to be you being able to aggressively monitor. You're not going to be able to check their work every 5 seconds. You're not going to be able to have exit tickets like this.
Mm-hmm.
But just like even and this is what I feel like we've been trying to talk about is just the whole preparation. And we kind of talked about this with Michael Booth in the prior segment, is this whole idea of being prepared. Yeah. And I think that this is the first time in which we're able to kind of see very, it's like very aware, or we are very aware that we weren't prepared.
In any way, shape, or form. No.
Like, we did not have any tools. We did not have any resources, and we were scrambling.
Sorry, you're speaking in past tense. We do not have any tools.
Sorry, yeah.
We do not have enough resources.
Like, right now, we don't have it.
Right.
And literally, so Lindsay and I, like, when was that? I want to say a couple days ago. I was literally sending her different tweets I was seeing from different educators mm-hmm. who were like, yeah, so like, this is a space in which we've never been in before. So please, like, let's form a Google Doc so that we can just start sharing resources.
Mm-hmm.
And then Comcast came out and we were like, and said that they provide internet for 60 days. But the thing is, this is a whole kind of like a rabbit hole that I don't want to go down, but the promotion said it's 60 days and then after it's $9.95 per month. And it's like getting into that conversation of like, why? Like,
why?
Like, if you can provide it free, then what should like, exactly.
There's also a caveat to that because it says 60 days. Like, if you already have it, they'll give you free 60 days.
Right.
And they'll install it and then you can have free 60 days. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some places that are, why can't I think of the word? Shelter in place.
Uh-huh. Oh,
and you can't go.
Right.
Like my friend Shannon, she lives in Seattle right now. You know, Washington is getting hit the worst. But I'm like, oh, let's FaceTime. And she's like, I can't FaceTime. I'm like, why? The heck? She's like, I don't have Wi-Fi because by the time I moved into my space and got like settled enough for somebody to come out, they then shut everything down. So nobody can come in and actually put the Wi-Fi in her space. So it's like we have to move quicker than a virus at this point.
Oh my goodness.
In order for stuff to get popping.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. She doesn't have Wi-Fi.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That is insane. And so she doesn't have TV then.
No. She don't really watch TV.
I know, but
she might.
Right,
too.
Like now is the perfect time to be watching TV. Like, I'll be honest. Like, normally I don't watch TV either, but given the circumstances.
We watching TV.
Okay.
We inside. Right. We inside.
We ain't going nowhere. Wow.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah. But just going back, I just think that this has just shown that we need to do a better job of being prepared. And it's not even just about preparing for pandemics. It's just about being prepared in general for life. Like, life happens. Like, we don't know what is to come, whether it's this type of situation. So you need to know that you need to have like a stable and then we get into the conversation about like the communities that we were teaching in or that I used to teach in, and knowing like they may not have access to go and have 2 weeks worth of food just in case something like this happens.
Mm-hmm.
So like what type of supports can you put in place so that they know, oh, okay, like I know I just need to go here to get food in this type of situation.
So, sorry, y'all. That's my alarm telling me to go to sleep, but that don't matter now because I don't go to work. but anyways, about that point in terms of like, I mean, I'm sure people are aware and I've seen people repost it that there are certain schools or certain like community rec centers that have food and they're passing that out to people. But I don't know. And maybe I just don't know my areas enough. But when I first saw the DCPS list of schools that was serving food, I'm like, there's not enough Ward 8 schools.
There weren't.
There
are a lot more charter schools actually that are kind
that
of
were doing it.
Up
yeah,
to the plate
doing it. Okay.
That weren't listed on that. And that actually was, I completely agree. There were not.
Okay. Because public transportation in Ward 8 is a nightmare.
It's a nightmare. It's only like a couple of buses that run. A
couple of buses and one.
I know, Anacostia Metro Station.
I guess.
And then where was I? Where did we used to teach off of? What was that?
Livingston.
Right, but there was one, Southern Ave, I think, was the
Southern
closest
mm-hmm.
metro station to us. And that was like over a mile away from our school.
Yeah, that was too much.
So, yeah. So
Southern Ave, that's too much. It's too far. And then I got a police officer stopped me today to tell me like, hey, if you know some kids or, you know, families with kids, tell them to come to, I was over by Kipp Schools. I tell them to come here to grab food because people aren't grabbing food and, you know, it's like, it's going to waste. Hmm. And I just immediately thought like, okay, maybe this first week though, maybe families really don't need the food, but we get week 3, 4, 5, exactly. They might still need the food. But if you're right. basing the numbers of meals you're buying in week 4 or 5 off of week 1,
right.
you're not going to have enough meals by the time people really need the meals. So that's also, an issue.
Yeah. And
this is like a complete 360 for as far as what we're talking about to what we're about to go to.
Yes, derail us.
So, teacher pay.
What a smooth transition.
Because so I've been seeing a lot of these posts from these parents. I think Shonda Rhimes tweeted something about how if this is what educators go through on a daily basis, then they need to be making more.
Hello, we've been telling you that for years.
And I'm curious to know though, like, is this going to be enough to actually move the needle on teacher pay? Because it's like, this is, I completely agree. Like, this is something that we've been saying for years, but the action behind it has not, it's been extremely lackluster. And it's also so funny to me that with this new, like, government economic stimulus plan that they're trying to invest money into the economy, if you have all this money...
Why can't you just give
it to teachers? Why can't you just cancel student debt? Like, there's just so many things that I'm just like, okay.
Now we are able to do it.
So mind y'all, we just look at each other dumbfounded
because confused. What's going on? And like, ugh. Of course, I don't want anybody to be tortured, but right. I'm so blessed that parents are getting just a slight taste of what we deal with. Yeah. It's like, yeah, you have to deal with your kid all day. And I know that parents have jobs. I'm not trying to not acknowledge that. Yeah, you have to deal with your kid all day, but I have to deal with 26 of them. And they have significantly less respect for me because they didn't come out of my womb. Like, it's something I have to do every day. I have to figure out how to teach them. And like, oh, I don't understand this new math. Me either, sis.
Right.
Me either. And I tell my parents that all the time. Like, I wasn't raised with this.
No.
What are you talking about? I just memorize stuff exactly. just like you. But I have to unlearn what I've learned, then teach myself a lesson, then figure out how to teach it to, like, just a, I'm going to use the term regular, just a regular kid that this curriculum is built for. And then shift it around so that everybody understands it. Right. And I'm like, okay, it's not something that anybody can really do.
Yeah.
And we're so undervalued. And so I do hope that this provides a movement or like a system of advocacy that goes beyond just teachers and occasional admin, because sometimes, you know, they already good.
Right.
Like, we got to push beyond that because I really am slaving and I really am exhausted every day.
Speaking of, I saw a tweet about this situation, about someone literally said, I want to say they have like an EDD or something, and that's not really important, but whatever the case, you know, everybody who thinks that everybody's an educator all of a sudden. But he said that teachers shouldn't be using this time to rest. This is the time in which they need to invest more now than they have ever before. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's like, I hear you. Great. That sounds great in theory, but how do you invest more now than you did before when you didn't have the resources to invest then? And when you didn't have the preparation for what is happening now? That just really confuses me.
How do I invest more? I'm blind, Jahad.
Like, I don't get that.
I don't know what I'm doing right now. There are other times when I don't know what I'm doing, but I really don't know what remote learning is for 60 kids. Like, I don't know. I don't have training on Zoom and how to use it with groups of people. I had a Zoom meeting today with a woman who explained it to me, but no one's ever explained it to me. And she actually is a founder of a charter school here. And she's like, she's a professor at Johns Hopkins because she works, she's a professor for urban teachers. And she was like, yeah, they gave me a training, like a virtual training, and I didn't get what they were talking about. So I just looked it up on YouTube. But it's like, that's what you're asking us to do.
Right.
And it's like, it's the blind leading the blind and the ignorant trying to tell the people that are educated and actually in it what to do. And then I saw something about like teachers vacationing. What? Do you know how many thousands of dollars I'm still trying to pay Howard back for spending 4 years trying to be an educator?
Hmm.
Do you know how much money I pay for these assessments? Like, and for you to sit, and I'm passionate about it. Like, this is why I do this. So for people to be like typing to say anything about teachers like vacationing, like, this is my passion. Like, I've worked with my fifth grade class for 3 years. Hmm. You think it's comfortable for me to not be with them for 2 weeks? for 2 weeks and know that there's kids literally struggling right now with the review work and I can't help them? You think that's comfortable to me? Right. You think I'm vacationing? No. You think I'm okay with the fact that I may not see them for months? I may not see them for the rest of the school year? Hmm. You think I'm okay with that? You think I'm okay within like 10 years? I don't know how the coronavirus and the lack of consistent education the last year in fifth or sixth grade is going to impact them. You think this is a vacation for me? Well, then you need to think again. Seriously.
I completely agree. And that's what, I think that that's something that I really have been thinking about is when I was in the classroom, it showing up every day was amazing because you get to see their faces. And like, even though sometimes you know that you don't get faced with some type of disrespect, that was unfortunate, but you know, you're still going, trying to be optimistic. But I think that what got me is showing up every day and seeing the gaps that we had to fill. And then just trying to remain optimistic, but to know that now we're still going to be expected to fill gaps without having the tools to do so. And we're literally like, we're trying to throw stuff at the wall to see what sticks. And that's what is so concerning to me.
That was a good metaphor. I've never heard that one.
Oh, well, I broke it. You always say that. So, Linz, as you know, like, I think another element that we haven't talked about yet is the IEPs and students who have differing abilities. And you and I both know that this is something that I've been studying while at Howard. and we both know that the needs aren't addressed enough as it is within a school year, within a school day. Mm-hmm. So what does a system look like right now?
Chaos!
If we're going to be virtually teaching.
Yeah.
And I know that IEP meetings are still going to be happening, but there's these things called present levels of performance where you're able to look at how a student is currently performing. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to be able to do that because you're not getting work consistently. Mm-mm. But not only that, but what about the students who were already in the process of being identified as needing to have services? How do you assess those students now? And how do you ensure that whatever support you were going to put in place, because we're kind of, it's March, so we have April, May, June remaining in the year. And so technically, if you have had this student who's kind of been on like the cusp of a kind of a retention conversation, we're probably gonna jump into that a little further deeper in the next episode. But if you can identify some type of support that student needs right now, how will you be able to do that virtually?
Oh, you want me to respond? Because I'm sitting here thinking like, I don't know. All that. I have no idea. Like, hello, I have students with ADHD. I have students with like just typical learning disabilities. Yeah. I have a student who has a 504 plan because they have a condition that has impacted their learning. It's like I'm thinking about just a few kids, like they're coming from they get taught three different ways, you know? And then those are just the kids that have the IEPs. Like, I really don't know. I had a call about an IEP meeting today. I was on the phone for 56 minutes, for those of us that think we're vacationing. but anyways,
sorry.
I was on that phone call for 56 minutes, like, talking. And it was so hard because I'm like, yeah, this is what we should do when we get back to school. We may not get back to school.
Right.
So it's like, I really don't know. And we can't leave it up to the parents because from my experience, I feel like if we had more parents that knew how to be active in their child's education, we'd have less IEPs. I have a specific child who is on the spectrum a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I've been told that in second grade, they try to get him IEP and the parents are like, no, but they're on it. I text them and be like, hey, so-and-so doesn't know how to do this. They're teaching it to him that night. So he's able to keep up with everybody because he has support at home. So it's a lot. At this point, it's parent accountability. And we're seeing the parents that aren't being held account or aren't holding themselves accountable or don't know how to hold themselves accountable.
Exactly.
Because it's both. It's both.
It is both.
Like, I want to acknowledge that there's some parents who are just not holding themselves accountable, but there are parents who, like, really don't know all of what it takes. And that's reasonable.
Yeah. And I think that and we'll definitely, in the next episode, we're probably going to have to talk a lot more about
so many other facets of what was left in this school year. Because I don't even think that we really didn't jump into that at all.
But
with that being said, I think
go ahead and say the thing that you want to say. He's been talking about saying we've been planning this episode and he's been talking about saying this. I'm like, Jahi, we can't be ghetto. We gotta be serious. Go ahead.
I can't.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I low-key forgot. I know it's coronavirus.
It's getting real.
It's getting real. That's
not how he said it before, y'all.
That is it. I have so much hype. But
be embarrassed. That's what I you should be.
It's not very
you
embarrassed.
No, but so we appreciate y'all for tuning in. Definitely be safe, y'all. Please. Check on your educator friends. And stay up.
Period.
Be safe. Be full, be fed.
This week's call to action is for you to do the following. Check on your educated friends. Check on your anxious friends. Check on your fit friends who can't make it to the gym.
Yes.
Check on your friends with autoimmune disorders. Check on your friends with kids, your friends who have hourly wages, your friends who may not have a formal graduation. Check on your Pisces and Aries friends because they stress. They ain't got no birthday. They try and move to Taurus season, so I need to quit playing.
Please don't do it to us.
And check on your friends who have family members who have contracted the virus. Just check on everybody if and when you have the time. And I'm going to assume you have much more time than usual.
Yes, that's very true. And just go ahead and please copy and paste the link to this episode to spread the word about how COVID-19 is impacting our school system so that when it is time to put in some work and make change, then you're already equipped with the knowledge to put some action into place. Stay tuned for part two of our coronavirus series. Super excited to be giving that to y'all. Also, follow us on IG at Hadi Had, HadyHad, and Lins at Mama Lins, MamaLinds, 22.
Thank y'all for listening, and please stay safe, and please stay sane.
Yes. Stay safe and sane.
Bam.